train near the Tigris River. In a few minutes, on this cold gray dawn in the 111th Olympiad, the King of Macedon will lead these men, a tiny army of only 47,000 soldiers, down to the attack on a million enemy troops led by Emperor Darius of Persia. If the Greeks can win against these overwhelming odds, they will achieve the almost impossible and set Alexander of Macedon upon the throne of all Asia. If they are defeated, however, these Greek soldiers know that the Persians will show them no mercy. They know that the stake today is literally victory or death. Can the Greeks win against the terrific odds? That's the question uppermost in the minds of every officer, every foot soldier.
October 1st, 331 BC, Persia, you are there.
Alexander of Macedon about to attack Darius of Persia. 47,000 Greeks against 1 million Persians. CBS takes you back more than 2,000 years to the most amazing gamble in all military history. All things are as they were then, except for one thing. When CBS is there,
you are there.
You Are There, produced and directed by Robert Louis Cheyenne, is based on authentic historical fact and quotation. Today's broadcast, The Battle for Asia, is part two of a trilogy. Alexander the Great seeks mastery of the world. And now,
Persia, with the Greek forces at the Tigris River and John Daly.
Greeks against 1 million warriors of Asia. Odds far greater than any army has ever faced before. The feeling among the troops today is in direct contrast to the sentiment that prevailed here yesterday. Yesterday, Alexander's men were excited at the prospect of peace. The Persian Emperor Darius offered the Greek king half of Asia if he would end the war. The troops were hopeful that Alexander would accept, but the King of Macedon rejected the offer. He chose instead to fight for all Asia. And although his men are determined to equip themselves as well as they can, they don't welcome the prospect of today's fight. They see themselves going into almost suicidal battle. Why did Alexander turn down Darius's offer? Why did he choose to throw his badly outnumbered Greek force against the huge army of the Persians? For some answers to these questions, we take you now to Greek Army headquarters, somewhere behind the lines, and Major George Fielding Elliott.
In choosing to fight rather than make peace, Alexander is gambling everything on his belief that the small but superbly disciplined army can defeat the army of Darius, which is vastly superior in numbers but loosely organized. During the 3 years that Alexander has been campaigning against the Persians, he has put his faith in Greek discipline against Persian numbers again and again, and won. At the river Granicus, it was 30,000 Greeks against perhaps 200,000 Persians, and Alexander won. At the Battle of Issus, it was 40,000 Greeks against about 400,000 Persians, and Alexander won. But today, the odds are not 7-1. They are not 10-1. They are 20-1. And the question is, will Alexander's hitherto successful formula stand the test of these newer and greater odds? The Persian front is so wide that it extends far beyond the Greek flank. It is entirely possible that despite Alexander's superior mobility, the Persians will outflank, surround, and destroy him by sheer weight of numbers. Darius has chosen today's battlefield. It's a broad, flat, and deep plain, perfect for maneuvering the great masses of men at his disposal. The main weight of the Persian attack will undoubtedly be aimed at the Greek flank. If Alexander can succeed in keeping his flanks from being rolled back, if he can stave off encirclement by the Persians, he has a fighting chance to win this battle. Ned Kelmer, on the left flank of the Greek army, reports enemy activity. So go ahead, Ned Kelmer.
From our position here at the Greek left flank, we can see a large body of Persian cavalry coming into the enemy line directly opposite. It's impossible to tell how many there are. The men here estimate their number to be at least 10,000. These men are going to have to fight against those Persians when the battle begins. So let's get their reaction to that additional enemy cavalry. Here's a mercenary with me now, a professional soldier, a veteran about 40 years old. He tells me his name is Nearchus. Where are you from, Nearchus?
Men who fight for a living don't have any particular home.
Oh, I guess they don't. Well, where were you born?
Sparta.
What unit are you with, Nearchus?
The javelin throwers.
Although, then you men will be among the first to engage the Persian cavalry. How do you feel about that?
I'll kill my share of Persians before I die.
Then you expect to die in this battle?
The Persians will take no prisoners.
But if Alexander wins, won't
he? Win? Against 1 million enemies? The king of Macedon has tempted the fates once too often. He has defied the god of chance for the last time.
But hasn't Alexander led the army to victory over great odds in the past?
We've been lucky. But this time Alexander has gambled away the life of every soldier in the army.
Then you think Alexander should have made peace yesterday with Darius?
The whole army wanted the king to make peace. Even the war council advised him to accept the Persian offer. But Alexander wasn't satisfied with half of Asia and all. He must have all Asia. He wants to conquer the world. The world! We'll fight. But the only Persian soil we'll win is the soil they bury us in. But I'll kill my share of Persians before I die.
Thank you, Nearchus.
Yes, if I'm to die, I'll take my share with me.
Yes, I know you will. Thank you again, Nearchus. The soldier with us now, judging from his armor, appears to be a cavalryman. Is that right, soldier?
Yes, I'm with the Athenian mounted auxiliaries.
Will you tell us your name, please?
Pausanias.
I assume you're not a mercenary, Pausanias. You're one of the Athenian conscripts.
Yes, we were conscripted to serve by the Athenian city council. I don't blame the city councilors. They had no choice. Much as they hated Alexander, they were forced to conscript us for his army. Alexander would have put Athens to the sword if the council refused.
Yes, I remember.
I haven't seen my wife and children for 5 years. They must think I'm dead.
I'm sorry, Pausanias.
It's been bad years, too, fighting in the service of a despot, watching these Macedon barbarians looting and murdering innocent people. But it's almost finished. Just one more battle. Then I'll go home.
You expect to go home after today's battle?
Alexander has sworn to release us from our service when he becomes king of Asia.
Then you expect to win here today?
I've waited a long time for this battle. We'll win if I can help it.
Think it's possible to win in spite of the odds?
In spite of anything, we must win. Otherwise, I'll never see my family again.
Well, you certainly have our best wishes today, Pausanias.
Thank you, sir.
Now, here's another soldier, a young fellow wearing the armor of the Macedon phalanx, one of Alexander's own countrymen. What's your name, soldier?
Amyntas.
Amyntas, that's a familiar Macedon name. How do you feel about the Persian cavalry?
A few thousand Persians, one way or the other. It's all the same to me. One Macedonian is the equal of 100 Asiatics.
Then you aren't worried by the enemy's numbers.
Worried? We'll scatter them as sheep scatter before a tiger. We've done it twice before, and we'll do it again. Before the sun sets today, our king will rule Asia.
What makes you so sure, soldier, that you're going to win today?
Alexander is invincible. A god born to rule the world. Our king has crushed every enemy that scares
me. Something is happening in the center of the Persian line, and it's causing a great deal of excitement here among these Greek troops. The enemy seems to be leading a number of huge animals out in front of their position. John Daly, in the center of the Greek line, must have a better view of them than I have, so go ahead, John Daly.
We've moved forward about 100 yards in front of the Greek line with several officers to get a closer look at those animals. I count 4, 7, 12, at least 15 of them. Great, hulking, four-footed monsters. Each one must stand about 10 feet high, easily several tons. Their hides are gray in color. Each foot is as thick as the trunk of a tree. They seem to have long, flapping ears and tusks protruding from their jaws after the fashion of wild boars. Their snouts are long and flexible. You'll probably find this hard to believe, but their snouts reach almost to the ground. The bodies of the beasts are covered with plates of armor, and the animals have platforms lashed to their backs, probably for fighting men to ride on. General Parmenion, Alexander's chief of staff and commander of the Greek left flank, is coming up to this point now on horseback. Several staff officers are with him. They're probably coming up here to get a closer look at the Persian beasts. Greek travelers to Persia have brought back tales of terrifying animals such as these. I think they call them elephants. Apparently, the Persians have trained these beasts for use in battle, but just how they'll use them is anybody's guess. General Parmenion is dismounted. He's looking across the plain to the Persian line, studying the strange beasts. Let's see if we can get a statement. General Parmenion! General Parmenion, sir!
Yes.
Do you think that these beasts are elephants?
That is a possibility.
Well, do you think that they will be used by the Persians in today's battle, General?
That is also a possibility.
Well, how do you think they're going to use them, sir? What will the Persians do with them?
Those are questions on which we have some very definite ideas. But we are not prepared to discuss them at this time.
Well, do you have any defense against the elephants, General? Suppose they come charging into your lines, trampling down the men.
I assure you, sir, the Persians believe they have produced a secret weapon which will win this battle. They shall find themselves mistaken. There never has been a weapon before that wasn't countered. And we shall counter this one today.
Well, thank you very much, General Parmenion. Alexander's chief of staff has turned to talk to his officers. He and his aide are referring to them as elephants, and so I guess that's definite. These are elephants. Now, Don Hollenbeck at Greek headquarters, behind the line, informs me that he has a Persian prisoner with him who is willing to give us some accurate information about this new Persian weapon. So over to Don Hollenbeck.
The name of this Persian prisoner of war is Mithrines. When he was caught yesterday, he taunted the Greek intelligence officers with stories of those enemy elephants, but they didn't believe him. Now, however, the Greek officers have given me permission to interview the prisoner. Mithrines is a tall man, swarthy, black hair and a black beard curled in the Persian fashion. His armor is very fine. He's probably a member of the Persian nobility. Is that correct, Mithrines?
Yes, I am a kinsman.
Oh, a member of the emperor's bodyguard.
Yes. The kinsmen are the nobles of Persia who enjoy that privilege. With the finest body of troops in the army of his majesty, Darius.
Yes, I'm told you were caught by a very ordinary detachment of Greek scouts.
I beg your pardon, sir. They were Thracian scouts, not Greeks. There's quite a difference.
What is the difference?
Well, the men of Thrace, sir, are a more warlike people than the Greeks. Closer in blood to the Persians.
Well, I understand that for warlike Persians, you people didn't put up much of a fight.
There was no reason to resist. My party was outnumbered, and so we surrendered.
What about those elephants in the center of the Persian line, Mithrines? What can you tell us about them?
Ah, yes, the elephants. The Indian war elephant is the most fearful, terrifying weapon in modern warfare. It's not too much to say that the war elephant is the decisive, the absolute weapon of battle. Their effect on the enemy is incalculable. They strike terror in the hearts of their opponents. They cause panic among the cavalry and the foot soldiers.
Well, yes, but the Greeks say their cavalry and foot soldiers don't yield very easily to panic.
So much the worse for them. If the Greeks come within range of the war elephants, their destruction is assured. The beasts are trained to grip enormous swords in their trunks. Swords 15 feet long. They're trained to cut and slash at the enemy formations with those swords. Their tusks can gore a man with ease. With its trunk, the elephant can seize a man and horse, lift them into the air, and dash them to the ground, killing them instantly. The elephants thunder into the midst of an enemy formation, trample the foe underfoot, and what's more, the elephants themselves are invulnerable. Oh, I regret that as a prisoner, I shall not be permitted to watch.
Excuse me, Mithrines. John Daly at the center of the Greek line up front reports that Alexander is arriving, so go ahead, John Daly.
Alexander and the royal bodyguard are coming this way, riding through an avenue of soldiers of the phalanx, drawn up at attention. These troops are Macedons, the hard core of his army. They will bear the brunt of the fighting and will have to outdo all their previous exploits if Alexander is to win today. The young king of Macedon, only 25 years old, mounted on Bucephalus, his famous black charger, wears a helmet of polished steel with a white plume. Strands of his bright red hair are falling out from underneath the helmet. His armor is very light and fine. He carries a sword and shield, and as he passes close by, we can see that he is fresh-shaven. The king looks rested and confident. Alexander and his party have passed through the line. Now they are riding out in front of it in full view of the Greek phalanx. We've been told that Alexander will speak to these troops before the battle begins. The soldiers are silent, waiting for their commander to address them. In this army of 47,000 men, all eyes are turned toward Alexander. Down below on the plain, the million men of Persia must also be looking up here as they wait for the battle to begin. The royal bodyguard has stopped about 50 yards in front of the line. Alexander has wheeled his charger around facing his troops. He's signaled his trumpeters, and now they are sounding Alexander's battle call, the theme of war. Alexander has spurred Bucephalus toward his troops and off to and now he is addressing the soldiers.
Soldiers of Greece, I shall not attempt with many words to stir you to valor. I ask only that you remember your heroic deeds of the past. Their memory shall be enough to incite you to glorious triumph. Have faith in me, your commander. I have led you from victory to victory. Remember, this time we fight not for a mere city, not for a province. The prize today is all Asia. I admit the task is difficult, yet the battle must have only one outcome. We must destroy the enemy. If we fail, there is no retreat. Behind us are the river Tigris, the Euphrates, and countless miles of enemy land. We must advance and conquer.
Alexander has turned his charger toward the enemy, raising his arms high, sword in one hand, shield in the other. The king of Macedon lifts his eyes to heaven and speaks once again.
Oh, Zeus, ruler of the gods, all-powerful, lend your divine aid to my army. Give me victory today, oh, my father.
Alexander has invoked the aid of Zeus, and the king called the ruler of the gods his father. For the first time, Alexander has publicly revealed what Greece has long suspected. He actually believes that he is the son not of the mortal Philip of Macedon, but of the mighty immortal Zeus. Once more, he calls out, men of Greece.
Forward to the attack!
Forward to the attack, and now, with a blare of trumpets, the army has begun to move forward. The man speaks, Alexander has ordered absolute silence until the enemy is engaged. I'm going to move down the hill with the Greek center above me at the very crest of the tall hill. Ken Roberts has a commanding view of the entire battlefield. We'll cover the initial phase of the attack. Go ahead, Ken Roberts.
The vanguard of the Greek army is now almost midway down the hill, moving swiftly toward the Persians. The magnificently disciplined Greek phalanx, 1,000 men wide and 16 ranks deep, each man carrying an 18-foot spear, is advancing inexorably in perfect unison towards the mass of the Persian center, which stretches out like a leviathan on each flank, waiting to engulf the relatively tiny Greek force. The Persians have at least 50,000 cavalrymen at each wing of their long line. Between the cavalry wings and the center, Darius has massed several hundred thousand foot soldiers. And right there at the Persian center, protected by the screen of elephants, is the war chariot of the Persian emperor, surrounded by his bodyguard of kinsmen. The two armies are now separated by only a few hundred yards, and the Persian left is moving forward. Darius is not waiting for Alexander to reach his lines. The Persian monarch is striking the first blow of the battle, a thrust at that Greek right flank. Richard Huntlett is down below me to the right, closer to this action. Go ahead, Huntlett.
About 10,000 Persian cavalrymen have ridden out and struck at the Greek flank. They're trying to trip. Now the Greek artillery is at first gave ground under the murderous impact of the assault, but now they're fighting back savagely. Some of those Persians are fighting with swords and lances. Others throw javelins. Still others are mounted bowmen, loosing their arrows as they shout. The Greeks are attempting to maintain their cavalry formation using swords. The fighting seems indecisive. Greeks and Persians are falling. Now more Persians are coming into the fight. Darius is sending in reinforcements. But it's impossible to tell yet whether this is the main enemy thrust. Alexander hasn't yet sent any of the Macedonian heavy cavalry to help the Greek auxiliaries. The Greeks are giving ground. Ned Calmer reports that the Persians have launched an even more furious assault across the plain on the Greek left flank. So over to him. Go ahead, Ned Calmer.
From my position with General Parmenion's staff, I can see the fighting some distance away. The Persians struck at this flank in two columns. They're using tens of thousands of cavalry, archers, javelin men, and scores of chariots. They're knifing into the Greek line like demons with swords and lances, cutting a path of blood and death as they go. One Persian column is now attempting to turn the Greek flank. The other is fighting to break through at the center. General Parmenion is employing all his forces in a supreme effort to stem this murderous assault. He's thrown in the 1st and 2nd divisions of the phalanx, the Salian cavalry, the Thessalian horse, and the foot soldiers of the auxiliary brigade. But it doesn't seem possible that Parmenion can save the situation. The staff position here is being encircled rapidly. It looks very bad here.
This is Don Hollenbeck at Greek headquarters behind the lines. Go ahead, Ned Calmer. Go ahead, Ned Calmer. We hope to reestablish contact with the Greek left flank. The Greek forces are not only running into difficulty on their right and left flanks, but they're also in trouble here. Persian detachments right now are attacking the headquarters camp. The camp guards are resisting fiercely. Silicus, commander of the guards, has sent a message to Alexander telling him of the situation and asking for help. A bulletin's just been handed to me. It's from General Parmenion, commander of the Greek left flank. The forces under Parmenion have been completely encircled. They're in danger of annihilation, and the general has sent couriers to Alexander urging assistance. Ken Roberts, up at the crest of the hill overlooking the battlefield, reports activity in the center of the Greek line now, so over to him. Go ahead, Ken Roberts.
Alexander is paying no attention to the dangerous situation on his flank and in his rear. He is gambling everything on his all-out assault at the center of the Persian line. His skirmishes are attacking the elephants that protect Darius now. The Greek skirmishes are hurling their javelins and discharging their arrows at the beach. Now Persian foot soldiers are striking back furiously at the Greeks. They're trying to defend their elephants. A wild fight is surging around the feet of the elephants. If Alexander can break through that train of elephants, he can get to the Persian emperor himself. And it appears that's what Alexander is trying to do. And now elephants are rearing up, trumpeting with rage. They seem to have become maddened by the wild crowd of battle and the wounds that the Greek skirmishes inflicted on them with spears, arrows, and javelins. But now the elephants are thinking they're out of control, and they're turning around, charging back into the Persian line. They're stampeding the enemy. The absolute weapon that Darius counted on to win this battle has been turned against him. And the way is open now for Alexander to get to Darius. The king imagines he's taking advantage of it. The Greek troops are starting to charge. Alexander is leading the attack. John Daly is putting out a broadcast from a vantage point close to and overlooking the center of the line. So go ahead, John Daly. Go ahead, Daly. Alexander and his Macedons have smashed into the center of the Persian line like a thunderbolt. Emperor Darius' royal bodyguard of kinsmen have engaged them, are fighting bitterly behind the kinsmen. In his war chariot, the Persian emperor is shouting commands, trying to rally his nobles who guard his person. If the kinsmen fail to stop that savage Greek thrust, Darius will be at the mercy of Alexander, and we may see personal combat between the two monarchs. Something that Alexander is probably seeking, but from the look of this battlefield now, Darius doesn't want it too much. It seems incredible that Alexander has reached this point, but even now it doesn't seem possible that he can break through that mass of Persian defenders and reach Darius, for the kinsmen are great fighters, their ability known to legend. The Macedons here in the center must be outnumbered at least 5-1. Javelins and arrows are singing through the air. Spears and swords are flashing in the air, taking a terrific toll. The Greeks don't seem to be able to wield their weapons fast enough to make any difference in the dense ranks of the enemy. Cut and hack as they will, the Persians fall as they do in great numbers. Still, there are others always to take the place of those who do fall. And still, Alexander and his men keep hacking their way forward, keep plunging in against the kinsmen, and the kinsmen are beginning to waver, are beginning to give ground. as they waver. The Greeks fight with renewed fury, and this protective mass around Darius now is beginning to break up. Alexander is beginning to drive through the kinsmen straight toward Darius' war chariot. Alexander's been waiting for this moment for years. It's been one of his ambitions to destroy Darius in hand-to-hand combat. But Darius has turned. He's fleeing. He's refused to face Alexander in battle. He's swung his chariot around, and he's lashing his horses, and they're galloping away with him at top speed. Alexander's not giving chase. He's not allowing his emotions to master his military judgment. There's still help to be dispatched to Parmenion and Cynicus. There's still the great body of kinsmen here to be defeated, but the royal bodyguards have seen their effort turn and flee, and they too now are beginning to run away. And the sight of the emperor and his kinsmen in fight is causing general demoralization among other Persian units. Thousands of them are beginning to throw away their weapons. Thousands are surrendering. Thousands more are following their leaders in flight. The great shepherds are standing, halting the charge. Alexander is now calling his men around him, shouting to the fight. I'm going to try to get up there now. It's only a short distance away. We're moving through a throng of excited, exultant Greek troops. Their faces are alight with shock surprise. They never believed this would happen. Most of them were certain this battle would be their last, but now they smell victory in there, although they're still fighting up there on the flanks and in the rear. Someone has handed Alexander a captured Persian banner. He's waving it aloft. We're as close as we can get now. Alexander has the attention of his men. He's speaking to them.
Listening to The Battle for Asia, another broadcast in the series You Are There, produced and directed by Robert Louis Cheyenne. The Battle for Asia was written by Michael Sklar. It was part two of a trilogy, Alexander the Great Seeks Mastery of the World. Richard Waring played Alexander, and the cast included Arnold Moss, Joseph Boland, John Merlin, Skip Holmeyer, Charles Webster, Guy Sorrell, and others. Next week, part three of Alexander the Great Seeks Mastery of the World.
Mutiny in India. You are there.
Fine comedy, fine drama on the distaff side are provided every Sunday night by two of America's most talented actresses, Miss Eve Arden and Miss Helen Hayes. Every week, Miss Hayes is heard on the Electric Theater in an outstanding Broadway motion picture or radio drama, while Miss Arden brings you the lighter side of a teacher's troubles as the star of Our Miss Brooks. CBS cordially invites you to hear them both every Sunday night over most of these same stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.